course, at school, what games we play? Well, of course, there was the dreaded bull rush. We had this large hill in the, going into the flat part of the playground, and you'd run down there 100 miles an hour, and there's, you had to, it's full tackle. You see, you had to be full on the ground, or else you were to be properly out.
Girls and boys.
Oh yes, and no tackling. No tapping. It was all tackling. It had to be tackling. What else? Oh, we had some wonderful pine trees that got cut down behind the tree behind the school, and we made amazing forts in amongst all the fallen down logs. Honestly, I don't know how nobody got killed, to be perfectly honest, because all these quite big logs, and it could have easily just gone and collapsed. We had these amazing forts through everything. Hopscotch, yes, definitely, that was a hot one. And four square, that's right. Mm-hmm. There was definitely very good four square teams. And what else? Oh, the teachers at the time were very, very into singing. And, yeah, every morning the whole school would sing Morning Has Broken. Morning Has Broken and Oh, What a Beautiful Morning. There's three or four songs that everybody sang every single morning.
But so that was how the day started.
And then we get into lessons. But, I mean, I have some amazing memories. Like the door handle into the school, it was this big brass door handle, and of course the hooks where all the bags went. And we had one of those copy machines, those Gestetner, I think they're called, and the smell of the ink.
The old Banda machines.
That's right, it had purple ink, and it had that alcohol-based, if I'd smelt it now, I'd be right back to the start, you know, the teacher going, with the handle going round and round and round. Of course, play lunches and everything. Running around, yeah, as I say, absolutely nobody was overweight in those days because everyone was so mobile. It was incredible. And everyone had pretty good food as well. You know, most people would have quite, you know, good base food. I look around at the school, what they pull out of the lunch boxes now, and it's like, oh, Lordy.
Yeah. How did the teachers sort of incorporate that very outdoorsy environment into the lessons? Was it sort of quite active learning that you had when you were at school?
Well, I guess, you know, 45 years ago, it was very much, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic. Mm. But we'd spend a lot of time outside. We had kind of a big area of garden. There was a sort of a, not veggie gardens like now, but there were trees and things. So we'd go and, I don't know, draw pictures of trees. There's obviously pet days and things like that. So we'd bring pets to school. Most of the learning, I would say, was took place inside the classrooms. It's not so quite as interactive as I think as the education now. But we have wonderful craft. It was something called free time, and we'd have this huge resource area of paints and cardboard and stuff. So craft and free time. I remember doing a lot of creative work there, and I'm sure that's it's carried right through my whole life. You know, the craft and creation and stuff. And I think a lot of the attitudes, I think, was to is about responsibility, self responsibility, getting yourself to school, getting yourself done, doing your work. And I think a lot of the attitudes were, well, you do it or else sort of thing. And it wasn't like you couldn't blame it on somebody else. It was you, and
you took
the consequences. So it was very much a cause and effect type of environment, learning environment. And, you know, if you got it wrong, you got the strip. It wasn't like you don't do detentions or anything. You got a walloping, you know.
And what if you got it right? Were there things like school prize givings or anything like that?
No, we didn't have prize givings, but we did have gold stars. And to get some gold stars was big. Yeah, it was a biggie. And ticks and excellent and all this sort of thing. But, you know, they'd sit over there with a ruler and whack you on the knuckles if you didn't do your writing properly and stuff. You know, it's like you wouldn't dream of having that done now sort of thing. So I think probably the positive thing was the lack of negative thing in a lot of the time. But having said that, they were very, very good teachers. They weren't like really, they were strict as anything and respect, and nobody stood up to them, you know. But that was good. You knew where you stood. You be quiet, you sit there, you do your work, and that was fine. But the praise, and there was a lot of actual one-on-one as well, individual. I don't know how in a classroom, from a one to standard two, they managed that one-on-one time, but I definitely remember going up, spending 5 or 10 minutes one-on-one with the teacher about writing and stuff and discussing things.
So what happened after standard two?
Okay, form two. Right, well, I think when I left, there was two of us in form two, and I went to, well, yes, we had, there was obviously no college in the valley, so we had to go out, and it was quite a dilemma figuring out where to go, because at that time, Onslow College was very large, and it still is a large college, but Newlands was emerging, and they, I think Mum spoke to the principal and the teacher, Mr. Golder, and they decided that going to perhaps a smaller college would be less traumatic after being at a, I don't quite know why, because the class was huge, because it was all the kids, 30 or so in one room. So I went to Newlands College, but there was only two of us, but we got a taxi paid by the education department to take us there, so the parents didn't have to ferry it. And it was incredibly embarrassing turning up to secondary school as a third form in a taxi. So we used to try and get him to drop us off up the road so we could walk down and no one would see us, but he had to drop us right in the front of the school, and it was just, I remember just going, feeling mortified. But that meant we couldn't really go and play sport or anything after school, because we had to just come straight home. And there's some, hilarious taxi drivers, crikey, there was one or two that was just terrifying. They drove so fast, they were in and out in about half a minute sort of thing. We'd just be sitting there sort of in the back seat. And then when there's a few more came through, there was a bus put on, and that left from the crossroads, which suited us because we just lived right on the crossroads. But that, the bus stopped a few years ago, and I think everyone's sort of free for all now. So, yeah. But it was fine going over to Newlands, I went right through there and went on to a university at Massey in Palmerston North. So I was overseas for quite a long time, and then I came back to Wellington, and it's like, well, where else would you come if you live back to the valley? So I love, the valley is just a wonderful, wonderful place. And
were there any things in particular you missed when you moved away?
Well, I guess, home's home, really. And home, this will always be home for me. And yes, I miss home terribly. In particular, I guess just the whole thing, really. Our house, Mum, and the valley, and I guess it's because there weren't that many people of my own age, you see that? So I didn't have a lot of friends my own age, but we just made our own fun, you see. We did go off on our own a lot of the time with riding and stuff. But things to miss, well, pretty much everything about the valley, and I think that's why everything else outside the valley always seemed temporary. It was always like you always were coming back home. And it's very interesting because quite a large number of people who grew up here as kids have actually been away for a while and moved back to the valley to live and raise their families. Because I think if you have to live in Wellington, there's probably nowhere else in Wellington once you've lived here that you'd want to, because you're so close to town, whereas you have this wonderful rural environment and community, and you know most of the people. I mean, there's not many places you can drive down the road and wave to most people. Or if there's a problem, you could ring up someone and you know there's 10 people going to turn up with chainsaws, tractors, whatever. And, there's a great example with our new neighbour next door. She had a tragedy with her husband and he died, and everyone was there. There was meals provided for 3 or 4 months every single day by the community, and working bees, the garden was cleaned up. It's huge, huge response there. So I think, unless I was living overseas or somewhere a bit warmer, it would be lovely if it was a bit warmer in the summer, maybe. But I can't think of anywhere else I'd want to live. Certainly not in Wellington anyway. But